She baked. We are very excited to get started with this Brindlewood Bay episode. But before we do, I want to invite everyone to join us over on The Actual Place. That is our Discord server where we love to talk about the show. I'm sure regardless of how this episode goes, people will want to chat about it. I also want to introduce you to our guest GM once again. Say hi, David.
Hello. It's great to be here.
Yeah. Thank you for coming and for GMing for us, and I think I will go ahead and leave it off to you.
Yeah, wonderful. Hello, everybody. Once again, my name is David. I run a show called Trials of the Apocalypse, where we do one-shot games and Powered by the Apocalypse stuff. And Brindlewood Bay is one of, if not my very favorite game. So I'm super excited to do more of this today with this lovely crew. A forewarning, if any of my character voices sounds a little bit off, it's been a minute since we recorded. And it's early today.
Quite a minute.
Yes.
It's been a minute, and early. We don't normally record in the mornings.
Yeah.
I'm not usually even up for another hour or so.
My voice is like an entire octave deeper.
Yeah, I also got back from travel yesterday, and my ears are plugged. So if I sound a bit huskier, it'll work for my character at least. So.
Perfect. But it's a delight to be here, and could be, we don't know yet, but you'll know, listener, because it'll be marked in the show notes. This could be the finale episode of Brindlewood Bay. Prior to us starting on mic today, we've discussed that maybe it's time to do a little theorizing. Last episode, we finished up the biscuit round to great effect on the great Brindlewood Bay Bake Off. And we have enough clues assembled. We have 6 regular clues, 1 void clue. And since this is a special one-shot mystery, we can sling a little void for a normal theorize. Why not? So that means we have 7 clues ready for this theorize. It's a complexity 7 mystery. So it's an appropriate time to maybe consider doing this. So to paint the scene a little bit, the biscuit round concludes. Heath calls and the camera's cut. He mouths to everyone to take a 10-minute break, and then realizes that the cameras are off, so he doesn't have to mouth it. He could just say it. And he's like, take ten, you know. But then, like, we're gonna come back to this right afterwards. We gotta keep this ball moving. Gotta keep this momentum, okay? Where do the 4 of you go to gather in order to chat about all that's happened today?
I think I'm gonna gather up a plate of my biscuits,
yes,
and gravy, and bring them over to the others with just kind of a long face, because I have realized that I made the wrong thing at this point. And I bring it over, but I figure it will still make everyone feel nice and full, so I bring over a plate of biscuits for everybody. Who I'm sure look at me with sadness.
Rose is never one to waste her food at all, so after the round's over, she has done the same. She's got, she has them on a plate, and she brings them as well. And I think it's a very, very stark contrast between hers and yours.
Yeah. We just gather at whoever's table is kind of in the middle.
Well, we may want to theorize outside of the ears of others.
Perhaps, yeah. Yes.
Maybe we, I think maybe Doris, she maybe just kind of goes and stands like under a tree, like outside of the tent, just kind of like looking over to everybody else, trying to like indicate like, you know, come over here, you know, maybe nodding her head, you know, something like that.
I see you and I go over.
Yes, I think
bringing my biscuits.
Yeah, Gladys will come over too.
Yes, we both carry our plates outside, and we are standing under this tree, partaking of our. And it looks.
Oh, I'm sitting under the tree.
Oh, sitting. We are under the tree in some capacity. Okay.
If I sit down under this tree, I'm not going to get back up again, so I stay standing.
Yeah. I think it's pretty clear, like, why we're all meeting to the side here. So Doris just says, so what do we think is going on? Any ideas?
I think I made the wrong biscuits.
Well, yes, but they look lovely.
Oh, thank you, darling.
And I reach out to take one.
Yeah. But I'm sure you mean about the murder.
Yes.
And Rose looks around at everyone and says, well, I think before we jump to any conclusions, it might be a good idea to take a full stock of everything that we know. And this is cue David to...
Hey, David, what do we know?
David, please tell us, because I cannot do all that in character.
Well, tell me what you've discovered so far.
I mean, I can read it off the mysteries
voice
tab.
Voice in the sky? Can we have a list of all of the clues that we've learned?
No.
I actually do want David to read it
okay.
out.
Okay,
so
yeah.
Also, when it's time to theorize, and until we get to kind of like our final theory and the Maven's discussing like this is what's happened, usually we reserve that conversation for kind of more above table discussion.
Okay.
You can do it in character, but it'll go a little bit slower as you.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
true.
Yeah.
That's fair. Yeah.
Add all those bits. So, boy, a lot has happened. Let's actually start talking about who our suspects are. So, of course,
everyone.
Paul Rivera, who is our not our suspect but our victim. Who was found dead in his trailer, on his knees, face covered in flour, hands tied. We all know who Paul is at this point. Let's talk about some of our suspects. So we have Sue Mellon, who's one of the presenters. She's boisterous, punny, a hugger. She was a very successful comedian in the UK and took this presenter job when her comedy career started to have some issues, you know. It's been rumored that she's jealous of Paul, who's the breakout star of the Jolly Good Baking Show. We met Sue earlier. Isn't Sue in the hospital now? Didn't that happen?
Yes.
Wasn't Sue the one who got hit with the dart?
Sue was taken
so.
Down.
I'm pretty sure
I thought
it was
Sue. Jane Leaf.
No, Jane was...
I could be wrong. Oh, no, Sue did get hit with the dart. Okay.
Right,
yeah.
I think
yes.
Jane
yes.
Leaf was the one who had fainted, right? So
yeah.
they were
yeah,
like,
she
taking
saw,
care of her in the
She saw
trailer.
What happened to Sue and fainted, but...
She had fainted
that doesn't
already
mean
from
she's
Paul
not a suspect.
Then, that's true.
Yeah,
maybe she you know she hey. Got herself darted.
Rule
exactly.
out no
exactly.
one.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
This is so, like part of our conversation.
We have another suspect, Timothy Boosh, who's the other presenter. He's weirdly large, broad humor, a bit gothy. He's just along for the ride, doesn't know the first thing about baking, but you know, he's lucky to have stumbled into this gig. We saw a little bit of him. He hasn't featured terribly much in our game thus far. We have Jane Leaf, one of the judges, of course. Sweet, judgmental, elderly, posh. Like all the other stars of the Jolly Good Baking Show. I keep wanting to... Sorry, everybody. Disclaimer. Any references to a known cooking competition that may or may not take place in Great Britain should not have any bearing on the game we're playing. No relationship.
It's purely a coincidence.
It's all accidental. So, Jane Leaf, like all the other stars of the Jolly Good Baking Show, her contract is up for renewal. We described this earlier, actually. We're in a... renegotiation period of the contracts, and one of our clues, actually, we'll get into in a minute, was that Paul was making some pretty outrageous demands. So she's grown frustrated with Paul's hardball negotiation tactics, which threatened to shut down the show entirely. So that's what we know a little bit about Jane. She has fainted, yeah, twice, I think. She fainted when they discovered Paul, and then she was reclining in Sue's bed or couch in the other room we didn't really see. And then she saw Sue... get darted and then fainted a second time.
Yes.
Poor Jane.
She also, last episode, she petted a lovely cat and bared her
true.
Heart a little bit. To the,
that is
to the
true.
Cruise.
We had a heart-to-heart, she and I.
We have Scott Lamb, who's one of the contestants. He's organized, fond of bow ties, bit of a twink. Scott was a contestant on the Jolly Good Baking Show 3 years ago, and he famously went home after an explosive on-camera argument with Paul over a pan of oven-baked muffins. Many viewers, however, believe that there's more to that story, with some suggesting the two were secretly lovers.
Which we know is true now.
Yes.
We did find certain evidence.
Casting.
Oh, yeah. In a bit of stunt casting, he's been brought back for this special episode, and he's been staying here in Brindlewood Bay. And yeah, we did discover one of the clues that was a little bit suggestive in his station, so some info there. We have Melanie
the
Blair.
Ball gag, the handcuffs and the riding crop.
Yep. That okay. was them.
That was it.
I just wanted to list it out.
We have Melanie Blair, who's one of the other contestants. She's pretty frazzled, but is actually a quite competent baker, very sensibly dressed. She's a Brindlewood Bay local and learned to bake from her parents, who used to own the Sweet Sensations Bakery down the road before it went out of business due to pressure from a bakery chain owned by Paul that moved into Brindlewood Bay. So,
Have we talked to her at all?
No.
I think she's appeared, like, in our view, like, maybe twice during each of the ads.
I don't think we've talked to her, like, at all.
Melanie has been on the periphery this whole time. Maybe she's the mastermind. Who knows?
Ooh.
We also have Heath Hendricks, a producer. He's stern, balding, excessive use of, like, 3, 2, 1 and other, like, finger signs. Heath is overworked and irritable. He's furious that Paul Riviera has been threatening to leave the show if his ridiculous contractual demands are not met. Mm. And we've seen a little bit of Heath here and there. He's like kind of been around us the whole time. He was yelling at Donna for one of the clues, so we'll get there. We have Buck, who's a cameraman, good-humored, handsome, poetic. He's been with the Jolly Good Baking Show for a few months after he got the job, and he's hanging out here. He's been behind the scenes. I don't think we've talked to him much.
No.
Maybe once. And then we have Donna Riviera, who's the wife of Paul Riviera. Bottle blonde, leopard print, piles of makeup. Like her husband, Donna Riviera is a celebrity, having starred in the short-lived reality television program The Real Scousewives of Liverpool. And I don't know if it's come out, but we certainly could integrate it in our story if we wanted to. It is a known quality about Donna, not a clue. She has been having an affair with Buck, the cameraman, for the last few months. She's the one who landed him the job here. That could be a little bit of a scuttlebutt you've heard. It's not an official clue, but it is in the character description, so I'll hand that out for free.
Hmm.
And let's talk about the clues we have received, kind of in the order we've received them. So after investigating the scene of the crime, there were signs that Paul was murdered, and specifically poisoned. We found trace amounts, I think, around his lips and, like, the coloration of his veins. There was a shattered Britty Award at the scene, and none of the other trophies or anything that were littering his walls had been, you know, destroyed or fallen off in any way. We later actually received a bit of an explanation from that. Yeah, I think we received a little bit of an explanation from that from Scott Lamb, the contestant, because you asked him about the Britty Award. Does anyone remember, did he say that it was broken after, broken during? I'd have to revisit the episode.
Right, because he had a fight with Paul, and he said he was already broken.
Yeah, I thought he said it was broken before he got there.
That's what I recall. I could be wrong, but I recall that.
Okay.
I think you're right.
I will trust the memory of y'all. So prior to...
That's not a good idea.
Yeah, so Scott Lamb was there at the scene shortly before. He was certainly involved with why Paul was tied up or something, maybe, but...
or something.
Maybe, just a little bit.
He claimed that the award was already broken when they got there. So bear that in mind.
Claimed.
But as always, trust no one. While we were in Sue Mellon's trailer, we saw a pair of tickets to Romania sitting on her table. And by the time we'd seen those, we couldn't ask her about them because shortly before that, we saw Sue get hit with a dart in the neck. And outside, there was a group of figures with featureless wooden masks who disappeared after Gladys looked away.
Yeah.
So that happened. After Sue gets rushed to the hospital, we ran over to our biscuits round because it started. Or maybe it was actually shortly before that. While talking with Scott, we discovered the ball gag handcuffs and riding crop underneath his station. And also overheard a plea for financial help from Donna to Heath. All we heard was Heath say that he wasn't going to give her money anymore, whatever that meant. And then finally, what we learned was, mentioned earlier, there's a series of unreasonable contractual demands. We learned this from Jane Leaf while she was petting our lovely animal companion. And she explained that there have been contract renegotiations, that Paul was making intense demands, and referenced his wine chiller in his trailer as an example. And those are the clues that we have so far. Does anybody have like a little seed of narrative to get the ball rolling? Also, before we get too far into this, I suppose I should announce the move that we're using right now for people unfamiliar with Brindlewood Bay. We are currently doing what's called Theorize. This is one of our basic moves. Theorize is when the mavens have an open, freewheeling discussion about the solution to a mystery based on the clues they have uncovered and reach a consensus, roll plus the number of clues incorporated into the theory or otherwise explained away, minus the mystery's complexity. On a 10 plus, it's the correct solution. The keeper will present an opportunity to take down the culprit or otherwise save the day. On a 7 to 9, it's the correct solution, but the keeper will either add an unwelcome complication or present a complicated or dangerous opportunity to take down the culprit. And on a 6 minus, the solution is incorrect and the keeper reacts. However, if you all put on a crown, then we can upgrade the roll from, you know, a 6 to a 7 to 9, or a 7 to 9 to a 10 plus, or on a 12 plus, a person involved in the dark conspiracy of Brindlewood Bay also reveals themselves to the mavens. So,
okay.
So with those in mind, what are we thinking?
So really quick, just one thing I wanted to clarify. It sounds like we're allowed to explain away clues if we don't think they fit into our theory.
Yes,
but that is counting as incorporating them to get the bonus.
That certainly is how it sounds. Usually I've played it as if you explain it away, then it doesn't factor in. However, again, it's a one shot. And that's certainly how it's worded. This could be a fairly stale wording of Theorize. I don't remember if this is the totally up-to-date version or not. There was like a revision made to Brindlewood Bay after its initial release and when the Kickstarter happened. And I can't remember which documents I'm working off of, so...
Oh, that's fine. think it would be fun to attempt to make all of them like not get explained away, but if we have to...
Maybe. If you have to, we'll consider that good.
I've got a few too, but you can go first, Susanna.
All right, so... I think that we have to make this void clue make sense here.
Right.
And I don't think that it's like a red herring. I don't think that this is like some kind of red herring. I think that these people are all involved in some kind of cult.
Are you saying this is a Murder on the Orient Express scenario?
I think the people in the show are involved. I don't think all of them are. I think some of the people in the show are involved in some kind of cult. And I think that like this show is like what's the word? Like funding this cult.
Okay. Funding the cult. Mm.
And I think that Paul's death has been a problem because I don't think Paul was in the cult. I think that Paul's death is happening because he wanted to take like too much money away from what these people were doing.
Right.
This is some kind of baking cult. I don't know what.
Some kind of baking cult. I love it.
So the Jolly Good Baking Show is a front for a baking cult.
Is it a cultinary problem?
Come on, Andrew.
I mean, possible title right
You're
there.
You're terrible.
I had to. I really like that. I like the idea because like the context of that clue was we assume they're the ones who shot the dart into Sue Mellon to knock her out before she said anything. And Sue Mellon is one of the, she's like part of the show, right?
Yep, she's one of the presenters.
So she could be part of the cult, maybe not the one that killed Paul. Or, you know, maybe she was going to say too much and they took her out for it.
Hmm. Yes.
I was going to bring up the fact that poison is a woman's weapon. So I think it's very possible that our murderer is indeed of the female.
It could have been a classic. The wife kills the husband for the life
I thought
insurance
that too.
Money.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's interesting, but the fact that like she's already involved with somebody else, you know, I think she probably like
she still
is
asked
fine
for money,
on her
though,
own
afterward.
Yeah, that's true. But is there any like indication that she's hard up?
But she's what?
Not per se, no.
She's hard up. She's, like, having difficulty with
I mean, Donna, there's, like, one of our clues is Donna was...
Yeah, that's one of the clues.
Oh, right, that's is that his wife's help. Name? I couldn't remember his wife.
Yeah. Donna Riviera was getting yelled at by Heath.
She did
because he was asking, or she was asking.
So
him
maybe
for,
she's
for
involved in the cult too.
I'm thinking that this this group of masked people, we've only ever heard it referred to as the network. So I'm guessing that this network.
The network
is.
You think that the network is not the name of like the. You think that the network is the host of the TV show?
Well, I mean, think about it.
That's pretty good.
Think about it. Paul,
I like
Paul
that.
Has been making unreasonable demands of the network. So perhaps...
Right.
So what if...
I love the idea that the network is just the code name for the cult.
Yes, I love that. That is amazing.
And what if they ultimately were like... Okay, this guy is poking his nose into... He's forgotten his place in the hierarchy. This is bad. Yeah. We need to get...
So we're thinking Paul was part of the cult.
Right.
If we did it that way, yes.
Well, because here's the thing. So, like, we were saying that, like, they were trying to use this show to fund the cult, right? Whatever, like, we don't really know, like, the goals of the cult, the beliefs of the cult, but for whatever reason, they were using this... baking show, right?
Okay.
So if he was supposed to be like the face, like the personality that was doing all these inflammatory things, like having like explosive arguments with contestants, like an affair with a contestant, you know, all these things, like maybe that was all for the show, which kind of like weaves in these
boost the ratings.
Like, so he was doing that, but then there's this problem in the background of, you know, he's trying to ask for too much, like he's you know, hurting the ultimate goal of this cult in some way by you know, asking for what he's asking for.
Yes.
Yeah, so I think they needed to get him out of the way, but the question is,
okay, what if Paul is in the cult but his wife is not? So Paul is making these unreasonable demands against the you know, the network, so to speak. And Donna needs money, so the cult, you know, plants these ideas in her head via someone else that's in the cult to murder her husband so that she can get the life insurance money, thereby doing what the cult wants without the cult being involved.
But here's the question. Why would she be asking for money after Paul's death? Like, maybe she thinks she's not gonna get it. Like, maybe that's the thing, is like, if she's asking for money after he's dead, I think maybe she thinks that she's not gonna get it, so why would she kill him in the first place?
See, I was wondering if it's maybe Sue Mellon, because if we're saying that there's that this cult is the network and it is like tied to the show itself, then she is, you know, one of the presenters. She had a flatlining comedy career, so maybe she was also, like, in the background of all the cult stuff, she was also jealous of his success as the face of the show and not her. So maybe, you know, the cult had this idea and she was all for, you know, killing him. She's the one who did the deed and broke the award just kind of as an act of, you know, crime of passion, so to speak, while she was killing him. And then,
but she's so sweet.
The poison took Wild. Well, but see, that's the thing. Like, you know, she's a presenter. She's a personality. She can
the network.
Maybe Sue got Paul to sign over his, make her the beneficiary of his life insurance. She convinced the wife to do it, but Sue's getting the money and not Donna.
Maybe that could work.
Because Sue was the one with the tickets to Romania, right?
You know who I think is the mastermind of this?
Yep.
I think the mastermind is Jane.
Oh,
because who
sweet
faints
old Jane
in real life?
Yeah. Sweet old Jane. Yeah, maybe. So hold on a second. I love this. So I joked about the murder in the Orient Express thing, but maybe that's exactly how this plays out, is like just about everybody associated with the show is part of the network, and in some way we're part of it, and like we can like weave all of them.
I think it's a woman's network.
Mm. Oh, okay, you think that it's only the?
Yeah. I don't think the dudes are involved in this.
You think it's a?
You think the cameraman and the?
I think all the dudes are like, just completely oblivious. They think they're just making a regular old television show.
Except perhaps, except perhaps Paul, who was poking his nose in where it didn't belong, and.
I think Paul had to be a part of it because he's like the face of it all.
Okay.
And he's the one making like unreasonable demands, knowing
maybe
that this is
all
dangerous.
Of the women plus Paul plus Scott.
Hmm.
I don't think Scott's
well,
involved.
Well, Scott is a contestant. I think what happened is like they use Scott as a way to boost ratings and have brought him back to like keep this thing going, you know?
But I don't think he's involved.
And maybe they might have even been trying to frame him for it, or Donald talked about, because, like I said, like...
Oh, they brought him back.
They brought him back to frame him. They used poison, but that maybe took some time to happen, knowing that Scott would come during a break to, you know, have a moment with Paul, you know, tied him up or whatever, and left him there, but then he died a different way, you know, like... So they were trying to do all that to, like, get... you know, Scott involved with the murder somehow, so that it ended up being him and not the network.
Yeah, I definitely think that they wanted to frame Scott because they obviously knew that this was going on. Yeah, right? Like they knew there was something happening.
They would have known, of course.
So I think that makes sense.
I mean, Scott came prepared as his station show. Prepared, so.
It's true.
Okay, I agree with that part, but how does the wife not getting, like, the money, like, needing money fit in, and the tickets to Romania and stuff?
Well, so...
Who's for the tickets to Romania?
So those were discovered in... Yeah, they were discovered on Sue's table. However, one of the key details we left out at the time was we didn't, like, check to see who the tickets were addressed to or anything like that. So they could be for anyone, and there's two of them. There's a pair of tickets. So we could work those in however we'd like. They just were discovered in Sue's trailer.
Right, because the detail hasn't been identified yet.
Yep.
I think if they're in Sue's trailer, they're most likely Sue's tickets. So maybe the reason that Sue got is because she was like having second thoughts about all this, and she decided to flee. Who's she fleeing with, though?
She did seem pretty nervous when you talked with Sue. Like when you specifically talked about stuff relating to, you know, who might have it out for Paul. She seemed pretty nervous, and then she got hit with the dart. And at the time, we were like, oh, you know, she was going to maybe expose someone else. But what if, what if she was involved? What if she was nervous because of her own guilt?
Exactly,
But if she was running...
So maybe Sue is the weak link. And maybe that's why Jane went to Sue's cabin, like, or trailer. Or trailer,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
Well, Sue brought her there.
So did maybe Jane get the life insurance policy signed over to her? Because we still need to work
Jane is the master.
The wife needing
I think
money.
She went to Sue's... I think she went to Sue's trailer because she knew that Sue was the weakest link. And then waited, and I think she gave, like, some sort of signal when she heard that she wasn't really asleep, I think. I don't think she was really fainted.
We didn't see her.
I also, we didn't see her behind that curtain. I also like the idea of this, like, sweet old lady being the mastermind behind it all.
Mm-hmm. I love it. We're sweet old ladies, and we're murder experts, so I think it's funny if a sweet old lady is also the murder expert.
I mean, do we want to make the role?
In the other way.
Well, so I think we need to just make sure we talk through
her.
Okay.
There's some things,
I think Sue is the weak link. I do think that Donna is involved. Because she'd be easy to, like...
I think they probably got Donna to give him the poison. Because maybe Sue or Jane led her to believe that she was going to get all of this money when he died, not knowing that they had changed the life insurance policy.
So maybe Donna actually, like, isn't involved in the cult. Maybe it's Sue and Jane are, like, the main cult
the
members.
Main
yeah.
Ooh. Yeah.
Mm. But they just, like, they were just like, she's an easy patsy.
Yeah. So maybe it wasn't Scott that are trying to frame then, but Donna.
Perhaps.
Or either.
No, I think Donna actually
I think they got Donna
to administer the poison by telling her that it would look like Scott did it. So they convinced her it would look like Scott.
And so then she gets
and
a little bit of revenge
on
him,
party,
too.
And she's with someone else, she can still get the revenge of her husband.
And to get back to that thing you were going to, like, saying, Hannah, like, how do we tie in, like, this plea for financial help? I think maybe, like we've been saying, she was led to believe she would get this payout because she wasn't getting more money because he was making all these unreasonable demands. Like, he's asking for all this money from the show for... useless things like the wine cooler, which leaves less of like actual pay to like him and everybody else. So she's like, he's not making as much money because he's asking for all this stupid stuff. You know, I need him to just die and get the insurance money because at least that's something, you know?
Okay.
Yeah.
Like maybe that's like another piece of it. Yeah.
Then I think it sounds to me like we're ready to start integrating clues officially and go through our clue list. Does everybody seem happy with that?
Yes.
I think so.
Let's build our narrative.
So we're going to do this in like in character then?
Not in character. For now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through the clue list, and then I'm going to take them off as we talk about them to make sure that they've been integrated into our story.
Okay.
And one of you or a couple of you should kind of like present then our kind of final conclusion to the Mavens, and then we'll kick off from there.
Awesome.
Sure.
Okay.
Okay. Cool.
And then we'll roll. Sorry.
Okay.
and then we'll kick off from there. So first off, signs that Paul was poisoned. It sounds to me like how we've integrated this is Donna poisoned Paul under the guise that are being told by the cult that it would actually fall on Mr. Lamb, Scott Lamb. But she's the one who poisoned him. He was poisoned because that's how she decided to do it.
I think she was at least the one who administered the poison, shall we say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Our group of figures with featureless wooden masks is either acolytes of or some part of the cult that Jane Leaf runs with the help perhaps of Sue Mellon. We have our formal list of suspects, but these aren't the only people involved in the production of the show. Like, there could be any number of production hands who, like, bring food onto set or set things up afterwards or do any of those sorts of things. And we have this cult of women, as we've described it, and maybe they're just a bunch of the production hands are women. They're all part of this cult being funded by the Jolly Good Baking Show. So we just penciled that in our periphery.
Whatever nefarious things.
Yeah. So that's two clues integrated. Then we have a shattered Brittany Award, which we think now that we have Donna being the one rather than Sue, is it still like a jealousy thing that like takes and breaks the award? Or
I think because she was also a celebrity.
Yeah,
you know?
It's true.
Yeah,
they might have also gotten into a fight about money.
Oh
beforehand.
Yeah.
Oh.
Like, maybe she gave him one last chance to, you know...
Maybe this is his, like, most prized possession, and she just got really mad and smashed it.
Yeah.
And then he needed to blow off some steam, so we talked to Scott.
Yeah, that works. I think that makes sense.
That'll work, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So our pair of tickets... Our pair of tickets to Romania, is that just Sue getting out? She's get cold feet?
I think the tickets are for Sue and Jane, because they're the leaders of the cult.
Oh.
So I think that was like their escape plan after this.
Or else...
Yeah.
Maybe it was a backup.
Or else
their contingency.
Like, just in case things went badly.
Just in case.
Or else it's like a worldwide...
Right. Or Sue has a secret somebody.
Or else it's like a worldwide thing, and they're like... Oh, we go back here, and in Romania, we will be safe, because there
That's
are
That's where
others.
The network headquarters is.
Yes.
I like that this cult is called the network.
Can we come up with an acronym for network?
Network.
I'm not kidding, by the way.
Not in
I'm
a
kidding.
Moment. No,
I'm kidding.
No.
Nefarious.
No.
Later. Enigma.
Later on. Later on, Hannah. Later.
No.
So we found a ball guy, handcuffs, and riding crop.
Hannah.
I'm so sorry.
We found a ball gag, handcuffs, and riding crop in Scott's station. Is that just evidence that
I think that's evidence of Scott's a dumbass?
Yeah.
Well, I think it's just related to the fact that they were trying to use
frame Scott.
His relationship with Paul as another way to frame somebody. Yeah.
The plea for financial help from Donna to Heath. Now, ooh. This brings Heath into our clue picture. Specifically, he was the one who said that he wasn't going to give her any more money.
Mm.
Right.
Of course, Heath might have been... What a great question. Maybe...
Yeah.
Or actually, I think I have a dimension for how we could integrate this. We've already alluded to the fact that Donna knew about the relationship between Paul and Scott. Maybe she had been, like, threatening to come public with that.
Paying her off.
Having that be rumored boosts ratings. Having that be confirmed might actually like hurt ratings.
Drop
like,
them,
especially if she put on like, you know, Paul hurt me sort of vibes.
Which is another reason why the cult would want to frame her, because uh-huh. she's taking money from what they need for the cult.
Yeah.
Or just outright get her to do it.
Right.
So
right.
is Heath
well, that's
just...
true. Yeah, get her to
she's
do
dumb
it.
Enough to actually do
right.
it.
Right. Get her to do it, yeah.
Is Heath kind of unknowingly working for the cult then? Is he
I
just
think so.
A
yeah.
poor frazzled guy being manipulated by this cult?
He's literally just like doing his job and doesn't realize who he's working
yeah.
for.
Yeah.
I think he thinks that the network is actually like a television network.
Or else he was just told, you know, hey, keep an eye on so-and-so for us. You know, we're not sure what she's up to or something. And then he's like, oh, sure, yeah, totally. And doesn't ask questions as to why.
Okay.
Dude's just trying to get a paycheck.
I think categorizing Heath as dude's just trying to get a paycheck is a fun response.
Yeah.
And so then our series of unreasonable contractual demands, where basically that's the pressure that Paul was applying that ended up getting him offed by the network, because he was
yes.
now
yes.
more dead weight than he was benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
So in the grand scheme of things, then, we're saying that Donna is the actual murderer.
Yes.
But it's because of the pressure of this cult run by Jane Leaf and Donna primarily.
Sue
Mellon. Sorry, Sue. I said the wrong name. Yeah, Sue Mellon.
Yeah.
I said the wrong name.
Yep. And then
and so Sue was getting cold feet about the whole thing.
Right.
And was getting a bit squishy.
Yeah.
And Jane Leaf is actually a cold hearted.
A cold killer.
Mastermind.
That's right.
I'm sorry, my brain is stuck on coming up with an acronym for the network.
We could talk about it.
Would they
afterwards.
Call themselves nefarious, though?
True.
Going back to your use of the word nefarious earlier.
Let's go back to InScene then. The Mavens have been discussing this for our 10-minute break, and they arrive at a sort of shocking conclusion. Maven of your choice, please take it away.
I think Rose will start it off, and she just says, "Those people in the masks you mentioned, they are the wild card here. They don't appear to fit in yet. I believe they might have something to do with the. We've only ever heard of it referred to as the network, correct?"
Yeah.
Mm.
I think you're right on that. I think there's something real fishy going on, you know, behind the scenes.
I mean, what other self-respecting UK-based show would have? Well, I don't know if they're involved. Although I believe they are. I believe they might be. Yes. It's there has been a murder. These strange masked figures show up. It's got to have something to do with those demands that Paul was making of. She said he was making demands of the network. Perhaps this network is those figures.
Maybe it's a code name
for something dark, something strange. Yes, I could see that the demands made. That were against their wishes. Yes, but then who did it? He seemed to be poisoned. I recall it was who might have done this.
Well, I think that much is obvious.
Oh, of course.
It's the wife.
It's always the wife.
Poison being a woman's weapon, she had financial problems, as we learned. She knew, likely, of the affair with Scott.
But of course, you know, Sue and Jane put her up to it.
Sue. I think so, yes.
Yes.
Sue?
Well, they're part of the network, obviously.
Sue,
and perhaps those tickets were their getaway plan.
Of course. Or maybe Sue was getting cold feet, as she did get got later on. Who faints in real life? Have you ever seen a person faint that didn't have some kind of medical condition?
I mean, that is accurate, but oh dear, I need a moment. And she just turns.
I put my hand on her shoulder.
She's just turned.
I just pat her.
She's just
gently.
She's just collecting herself because she's just been. She's seeing evidence that someone she's looked up to her whole life could be could be an evil mastermind, and it hurts.
Yes, that's right. I forgot that you had that kind of fangirl moment over Jane earlier. Yes. Yeah.
And then she just takes a deep breath. It's like, well, if we are to see this through to its end, well, they say never meet your heroes, and I can say she is no longer a hero of mine. She is a villain. A villain, yes.
Really quick, one question I have before I have a thing I want to say right there. Are we going to plan how to reveal it after we make the roll? Or are we going to like come up with a plan of how we reveal it, like who we think it is?
We will confirm the theory first with the roll and then discuss kind of what you... I'll start painting the scene and then we'll discuss what you'll do.
Cool. Because I had like a narrative thing that like I was just going to ask, like, you know, so with it being the network, how do we do it? But I guess it'd be good to establish that it is indeed the network first. Yeah. So
okay.
Yes. Okay.
She collects herself and then says, well, stiff upper lip and all that. Well, I suppose we must unmask them, to use the term, nothing intended, but we must show that they are working to nefarious ends.
Are we ready to roll?
I think we're ready to roll.
Oh. Right.
Who wants to do the roll? This is going to be 2d6.
Not Hannah.
Well, what's that? What's that?
I've got two dice in my hand, right?
I have two dice here, too, but Andrew can if he wants.
How about Andrew rolls one and Wesley rolls one?
Oh, I like that.
We can split our luckiest two people.
All right.
Which die should I use?
That's exciting.
All right.
All right, Wesley, you roll one, Andrew.
I got a six.
Andrew got
six. Oh, my God.
Wow.
Wesley.
All right, here we go.
Wesley, what'd you get?
What do you got? Come on.
I got a 2.
Okay.
Okay, so that's an 8.
That gives us an 8.
That's an 8. It's not bad.
On an 8.
But that means we can't get to the 12 plus because that's the one where they get to, like, we get, like, an extra person, like, revealing themselves.
You do get a conspirator. Yeah,
that's true. But if we do the crowns thing, though, we can still get to a 10 plus, right?
Yep, you can.
Do we want to add crowns?
I would rather add crowns because I just want this to be a slam dunk.
Well, I want this to be a slam dunk because I love our theme.
Yes, I want it to work.
Crazy
I really
is.
Do
like,
want it
I love it.
Well, also what I'll say, one thing I love to do with one-shots is have... Usually I'll do like little post vignettes with each of the mavens. Like, so if you remember the cozy vignettes we did at the beginning,
yeah.
I sort of do the opposite of those, where like how the mavens are changed after the course of this mystery.
Oh,
but
okay, yeah.
if everybody marks a crown, then that'll give each of you a scene of one of the crown questions of your choice. Either way.
Yeah.
So it could be fun either way.
I think so, yeah.
So then, yeah, if you guys want to everybody decide to put on a crown, then what we'll do is, at the end of the game, we'll resolve any crown scenes that you might have. That does boost us to a 10+. So your theory is correct. I will present you a scene to take down the mastermind behind this nefarious plot. Let's paint it like this. And then we'll hear kind of your plan once the scene is prepared. So, the cake round begins after this 10-minute break. Heath Hendricks goes out and he calls for everybody like, all right, we're rolling, get in your stations. And everybody quickly, you nod to each other knowingly and then head back to your stations. And the filming begins. Buck is going around. He's getting the early shots for this part of the episode where he's, learning what different cakes you're making. Someone somewhere is recording B-roll of your families to run in between to kind of set the stakes of what this means to each of you, that sort of thing. Before we get to like what your plan is here, or maybe it might integrate into it, what are each of you making for the cake round? There's still a round of the Jolly Good Baking Show happening.
Oh, is this like the showstopper? Like,
yes,
where
this is your showstopper.
Like...
Well, this is your show ender. We don't want to be confused with any
anything
real
else.
Or imagined
competitions.
I want to make a cake that when you cut it open, it says "We know."
I was trying to think of a fun way to use the cake as the way to reveal that something's going on, to get somebody to react to it, on camera.
I realize I might be jumping on characters here, but do we want to each have certain words in our cake so that when they open it up, it spells out this message?
No, I think.
I don't know.
And here's a message from our sponsor, Squarespace.
The show is not sponsored by Squarespace.
No, the show is not.
I mean,
that's funny.
Just that idea. You don't have to. But.
I mean, because we would have known that the cake round was coming up, so we could have talked about this on the way over. I mean, I like the idea of at least one of the cakes doing something to show that we know what's going on.
Mm.
Do we know, like, the order that they're going to look at us all in? Do we know who the last
one
would be?
Yeah, definitely.
No? Mm.
It's always been, it's usually Hannah's character, right?
I think it's shifted.
Oh, has it?
Yeah, I think it's been different.
She was the first
one. I think it has been slightly different each round.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay, well then do we want to just assign one person to have the message baked in, shall we say?
Yeah.
Oh.
Let's say it's Rose, because she's the most dramatic of all of us, let's be honest.
Yeah. You can have it be like a fortune cookie on top, and they break open the fortune cookie and it has it inside of it.
Yeah, you've like, you're going
to
like hand bake a fortune
cookie. Where did you have time to print
cookie?
The thing, though?
It could be written on a piece of paper.
Oh, that's true.
Because we want to see the reactions when they open it up.
She had to work in a New York City bakery. She knows how to. She knows how to do things quickly. So
that's fair.
What?
So the plan then is to get them to react on camera. Hopefully.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And then we can do our big spiel.
What she might do is either fortune cookie or otherwise, she'll be like, "I'd recommend this piece right here," and.
Yeah.
But as far as what I'm baking, do you guys want to go first, or you want me to do it?
You can go. Well, why don't you go last?
Oh, yeah,
last?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's introduce. We'll start. We'll go in reverse order from the characters in the Keeper. So we'll go Doris, Jane, Gladys, Rose. I want to know what each of you have baked for the cake round, and then actually we'll do as we go. Is it a rather disappointing or a triumph? So that can like build up our way through the cake round to the reveal. And then when the reveal is going on, of course, like we have both Jane and Sue here, potentially others. So I'll start asking the others for kind of like what, how we're dealing with all of this.
Oh, this is gonna be crazy. I love it.
But first we have to get our priorities straight. Doris, what have you baked for the cake round?
All right, so since I'm not the one that's going to be revealing, I have to go for a regular cake. The first thing that came to my mind was a wedding cake, like something really like over the top and crazy.
Yeah.
Just because. So I guess I'll stick with that because I'll go with my gut. So I am going for a red velvet cake, white frosting, like tiered wedding cake.
Love that.
I'm trying to go for something big and ostentatious, especially because, and this is also me campaigning for whoever's going to judge, I am the only person who can possibly take down Rose to win this competition, I will say. Because I'm the only person who hasn't been rather disappointing yet, and she can't be. So for anybody out there
Doris, what's the standout feature of this cake? What's like the secret thing you did for this final round?
Oh, it's not even a secret thing. It's just the wedding topper. You know, I came prepared. I knew there was going to be a cake round. So I brought my own like wedding topper from my own wedding.
Oh,
that's
so sweet.
To put on the top
is
like that personal touch. Yeah, to put that like personal touch on it at the end. So, yeah. Mm.
Well, Jane, is Doris's cake rather disappointing or a triumph?
I think it's a triumph. It's so sweet. It was literally baked with love.
Yeah.
Dead heat going into the finale then.
I mean, if there even is a finale after
well, hey, it's in the mystery description that the Keeper will declare a winner, so.
Okay.
But it won't be judged by the judges, so I guess we'll figure out what happens. We'll see how the scene goes.
You could roll for it. That'd be kind of funny.
Okay,
so,
I will.
So, now we got to talk about how cool the cake is.
Actually,
right?
I know this is a bit biased, but we did already have me and Wesley roll one die apiece, and I did contribute more to the end of the series. So.
That is stretching it, Andrew.
Your deduction skills don't have anything to do with the cake.
I'm just teasing.
Well, actually, to keep momentum, let's just I'll instead of asking everybody for something about the cake that's remarkable, I'll ask each of you as you're going through to like name your standout feature, and then we'll just celebrate
like
it, just so we can keep our momentum going here. Jane Fletcher, what cake have you prepared for the cake round?
I have made a devil food cake because it seemed appropriate.
I like it.
That's a tricky cake. What's your special feature?
Yeah. I got some like really fancy like Dutch processed cocoa powder.
Ooh, yeah.
So it's like a really dark, super nice cake. So yeah, it's really moist, but I think the really nice cocoa powder is the part that really makes it stand out.
Now, on a cake such as this where you know lightness is everything, it's a tricky cake to master. Gladys, is Jane's Devil's Food Cake a triumph or rather disappointing?
I think it's a triumph because she's cooking with the righteous I can't think of the right emotion, but you know, with the idea in mind that they're gonna get these guys. So
love that. Gladys, what have you brought to our cake competition?
So Gladys would be attempting to make a cake where when you cut like the cake, the slice looks like the pattern of the Union Jack. So it's like blue, white, and red cake. Oh, so that when you take a slice of it, it looks like the flag.
Oh my god.
I love that.
You're so over the top.
Is the internal picture, is that like your secret sauce, or do you have something other, some other standout
element? Yes, she's
element?
Baking her secret ingredient is a British pride.
Fantastic. Then I have to ask Rose Collins, is Gladys's cake a triumph or rather disappointing?
I will have to say, only because she was instrumental in solving this mystery, and
that's right.
Her first was not
only
at
because.
All. Oh, in part.
Because it wouldn't possibly beat you.
In part because, but also it is in the finale, so I'm gonna say that she has learned her mistakes in previous rounds, and she has managed to pull off a triumph of a cake.
Everybody Woo! Ending on a high note this round.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a delightful... I think when they cut through it, you have a delighted little smile on your face because you were worrying in the last minute whether or not you'd got the like sections of the cake right. And so when they cut into it, you're like halfway expected like the French flag or something.
Oh, that would have been so funny. Mm.
That would have been
hilarious.
In an alternate world.
Yeah.
And that brings us then, Rose Collins, I want you to do two things in this description of your cake.
Yes.
I want you to, we know what the secret inside is, of course.
Yes.
But I want you to describe the visual impact of this cake as you approach the gingham altar, as you approach the table.
Okay. As they're approaching, I had an initial idea, but I changed it. What my first idea was like the most decadent carrot cake you could imagine with the cream cheese icing and the orange color, but I changed it because this is the cake that's going to unmask everything, right?
Yeah.
So what they see is It's multi-level, obviously, and it's a... Have you ever... guys, think of a... Like, the color of a Black Forest cake, right? Like, that deep, chocolatey outside. And it's... As they approach it, it's on the multi-leveled. But as they approach, she has managed, with her piping skills, to pipe onto each level. You look, and there are like little icinged facsimiles that have been placed that show Paul, Sue Mellon, the presenters in, and of course she's put Paul on the bottom row, and she's and she's put Sue and Jane on the two higher tiers, and Sue is at the very top.
I thought Jane was at the very
top.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Jane
is at the top. Yes, the leader. And they're approaching and they're seeing this, like, it's mouthwateringly delicious. They could smell the chocolate just coming off this thing as they approach. And there is, of course, a secret inside, which I will, even beyond what we've said is inside, I will explain when she cuts into it. But
yeah.
She might be approaching thinking, Oh, isn't that so kind? She's put me at the top. Well, I'm not all that really. But the reveal is, of course, that she's going to. She's done patterns around the on top of each level of. This might be considered a bit of a morbid kind of thing, but she. Revealing that her hero was a villain the whole time, she really wants to get back at it. And so, what she has icinged onto this is, in a rather morbid sort of way, when they get close, they're looking at this, and icinged out on the top of the top tier of the cake across the top is a butcher's knife design just sitting there in the icing.
So, you approach... carrying this cake aloft. It is tall, it is impressive, it is beautifully, exquisitely piped. And you approach the gingham table, you set it down upon it. Jane gasps with delight. I think that Sue Mellon and Timothy Bush, our two presenters, are off. They're still in frame, but they're like off back and to the right from where we see Jane in front of us. And I think we said earlier that they're just going to CGI Paul in. And so Jane turns to Paul, who's not there, and says, "Oh, well, now doesn't this one look delightful? I see you there on the bottom, Paul. You like it there." And then she picks up a knife from the table and she says, "Nice clean cut now." And she puts it into the top and she cuts through the middle from the cake from the very top all the way down to the bottom. And as she pries it apart to separate, she sees something inside. Yeah, go ahead.
What she sees upon cutting this open is not only does, you know those little edible ball bearings that you can put on cakes?
Yeah. Ball bearings?
Yeah, no, I know what you're talking about.
Have you seen those, Hannah? They're
I don't think they're ball bearings.
Shaped that way.
Well, I know that, but that's the description
I was talking about. Just ball bearings made me laugh, like, thinking of them in a cake.
She lifts this piece out, and then in the midst of the inside, you see this silvery kind of shaped ball bearing, and she points to it and says, I would recommend that right there, dear. It's a bit of a surprise. And then also when you cut into it, I describe this as a Black Forest cake, which it is kind of. But in the inside, she's had some kind of filling. It's like this dark cherry. It's cherry and chocolate together. She cuts it open, and it looks like it might resemble some other kind of red fluid, which might be prevalent.
Did you make a cherry lava cake?
Ish, I guess you could call it.
Basically.
But it looks like blood.
And this silver is showing up in the midst of this dark red. And she just goes, I would say the prize of my creation is just there, dear.
And what is the message? Is it just we know, or?
I think if she was to cut this open, it's a like a folded piece of cardstock or something, and it's covered in this or whatever. And she opens.
Are you talking about like the red fluid that was on the inside?
Yes, she opens the silver ball, and it might be completely clear. And she opens it, and it says, "Well, see." She opens it. It says, "We know what happened, and who killed Paul. Revenge is a dish best served sweet. Wouldn't you agree?"
You open this message, and I think you even, as she picks it up out of the cake and, you know, cracks it open to read, you gesture to Buck, the cameraman, to make sure he gets this shot. And so he swings around to see the message, catches it on camera, and then turns to see Jane's face. And as the camera catches her face, we focus in on that too. We see a mixture of emotions. She was bemused as, you know, she uncovered this message inside of the cake. She was like a little bit, she daintily pulled it out, unfolded it in her weathered old hands. And then her eyes kind of like glaze over and go hard as she reads this message. And Buck does catch it on screen, but she closes it very quickly. And with a false smile says, "Oh, what? What are you talking about? Paul is," and she like pats the air next to her.
pulse right here with me. This must be some sort of joke.
Would you say the other three of us maybe like walk up?
Yeah. No, I want to ask the other three, where are you right now? So we've got like our two ringleaders of Jane and Sue both here in the tent with us currently. The tent is a tent, so, you know, leaving this space is very possible. Are we guarding exits? Are we... Have we summoned some other force to like help?
Yeah, I was about to say we should go get the
sheriff.
I was about to say I think Doris would have taken the time of the reveal. Yeah, to definitely go get our our sheriff.
We've had the sheriff go get Donna.
Oh yeah, yeah,
and like bring her in here.
Oh okay, no, we'll carry on then. Where's everybody positioned? And we'll make this sing.
I think I'm sneaking a bite of my cake.
I'm still staring daggers at Jane, I believe.
We went and got the two of us went and got Donna.
Doris and Jane
went and got Donna. And so I think we're like walking in now with the sheriff and Donna, like onto the set.
Yeah. The cameras swing to the four of you. You two mavens plus Donna plus Sheriff Dalrymple. Sheriff Dalrymple waddles as much as he does walk in. He's been eating like every leftover that has been on trays the entire day.
Of course.
Yeah, Sheriff Dalrymple's been having a heck of a day already, and now this is happening. He kind of harumps.
We got a bit of an announcement to make.
And he stops and says,
I said this is all pretty quick. You want to just talk about it?
I think Doris chuckles and she just pats the Sheriff Dalrymple and she says, yes, dear, we have it.
Yeah.
And she nods over to you.
We got it.
Good.
I got it.
He dives a hand into the Klosik cake and just takes a scoopful.
man of simple needs.
That's right.
I think I smack his hand first. I think I turn to Donna, who I'm sure is looking very nervous right now.
Yeah.
And I just kind of look up at her sweetly, and I just say, we know, darling.
We know who put you up to it, too.
I nod.
Yeah, I think her makeup is a little bit ruined. She's been, like, dabbing at it with a napkin or something that she's taken from one of the benches. She's, like, trying to keep it in order. And she, like, makes eye contact with Jane and then glances at Sue and just says, I told them everything. I'm so distraught over what happened. She's not actually that distraught over what happened. she's not. But this is... I think it becomes immediately apparent. This is her play...
To not
get on the hook for this. This is her plea bargain. She's gonna throw this cult under the bus instead. And she sobbingly points to them and says, like, they were the ones who made me do it. And
do what now, dear?
And she's like, they gave me the poison for Paul. They made me frame Scott. And Scott's like, what?
Oh,
and she's like, sorry, Scott, but also f*** you.
Wow.
And then turns back and says, they've been doing all sorts of shady s*** using the show. They call themselves like the network or something. I don't know. They're just bad people, and they were so mean to me. And like as she's saying this, Jane's face descends from being just kind of, you know, stock wooden, that fake smile, to a scowl. And Jane's gonna pull out a tube from like her pocket, and she's gonna try to blow dart Donna.
Can I interject here? Please.
Absolutely.
I am gonna... Can I just say that Rose abandons all sense of possible decorum she might have, and she just attempts to tackle her before...
You should, like, push the cake on her.
Or yes, I mean, it is a terrible shame, but she will sacrifice her masterpiece to take down the mastermind.
Oh, yes. I love this. So yeah, Rose, you see Jane pull this out. You see her readying it to fire, and you grab from underneath the end of the gingham altar, and you flip the table,
yeah.
And the cake flies. Like we're in bullet time. This cake lifts inches more off of the table. The layers start to delaminate as the force applies on the cake. It has opened up. Almost like the cake is going to eat her, like the layers have separated. And then we re-enter regular time. The cake flies at Jane's face. The weight of it knocks her right off her feet. She's covered in icing and that red goo you had inside. She lies bloodied by cake on the ground. And I think
does she inhale the dart she was gonna throw?
yeah, because she gasped and this cake was in the air, she's like and she's lying on the ground, a little bit of foam at the edge of her mouth from whatever the heck she's just darted inside. I think Sue is gonna try to make a break for it. I want so Rose is here at the table, she just flipped it and stuff, she's part of this scene. How do we stop Sue before she gets out of here? Everybody else.
Hannah, I think this one's all you.
Yeah.
Me?
Because I think we're kind of farther away, so I think we got Donna. Who's your responsibility?
Let me look at my... Maybe there's something I have that can help me.
Ooh, yeah. What do you have in your cozy place?
I have a totally not stolen artifact that I never decided what it was.
It could be something very heavy.
A photo with the Queen of England, a motorcycle with a sidecar, and my cassette recorder. I can throw my cassette recorder to try and bonk her in the head with it.
Or cassettes have the tapes in them. You could use it like a bolo and try to get it around her legs.
Yeah.
Pull the cassette out and ruin it, but throw it.
The actual, tape or whatever inside of the cassette to make, a bolo and throw it to tie it around her legs so she falls over.
Okay, I love this.
Oh, man.
This is going to be a day move, probably with, I could see composure, or either composure or vitality, but, you're trying to keep your cool in this situation, so I think I'm going to go composure on it. And what are you worried might happen if you were to fail?
That the tape will get destroyed because is the recording I took of, everything that happened.
You're throwing evidence?
Sue and Jay in the trailer.
Oh, boy.
Okay. Mm. I love this.
That's funny.
So, yeah, this is going to be rolling with you have a +2 to composure. And then, in addition, you're rolling with advantage because you've marked something from your cozy place. So roll 3 dice, take the higher 2, add 2.
Okay.
All right.
I got 2 5s, so +2 is a 12.
Well, excellent. On a 12 plus, not only do you do what you intend to do and hold steady, but you also gain some extra benefit or advantage. Yeah, you sling this around Jane's ankles as she tries to leave.
Sue's.
Oh, you're right, sorry. Around Sue's ankles as she tries to leave. She with like a, she topples to the ground, rolling. Of course, Sue was brought back for the cake event because she'd recovered from her darting in the hospital. But she's she was already weak in the knees, so she crumples you know those toys that are it's string inside of little wooden posts and you can press the button and they collapse to the side. Yeah, yes. Jane does. Yeah. Sue does that. She just crumples to the ground. And as she does so, here's your extra benefit or advantage. Flying out, she's wearing a nice suit that's her presenter outfit. And it's a wide-breasted one. And coming out of the side of that suit, bouncing across the ground, is a journal marked with the network and other conspiracies.
Rose is going straight for the journal.
Yeah.
maybe a wooden mask, pounce. Clattered out.
Oh, yeah. Yes, and with a small wooden mask.
What the network stands for.
Yeah?
Are you guys ready?
Oh, boy.
Yeah, oh, good Lord. All right.
What is it? What is the network?
The notable enemies of the wealthy oaf Riviera the Kinky.
What?
The network revealed for what it is. You pick up the journal and the wooden mask. Jane and Sue have been apprehended, and with this journal, you can uncover everybody else who remains who's a part of this cult activity.
Oh.
Woohoo.
And walking over with a scoopful of cake in one hand and a hand on their gun on the other, Sheriff Dalrymple walks over with that hand on his gun. He takes it off and grabs the cuffs from his belt, and he tosses them to Rose and says,
"Would you do the honors? My hands are kind of full here."
"With pleasure, dear." And she turns and slaps the cuffs on. It echoes around the whole space. And she just looks at Jane with the most stern and yet hurt look and says, "I am no fan of yours." And she just turns.
And as she turns
at the mouth.
yeah, Jane foaming at the mouth of the ground. As she turns, like, the camera freeze frames. Everyone is seen in the tent. We go black and white, and you know, the curtain comes in, and we have resolved our mystery of the great Brindlewood Bay Bake Off.
Yeah.
I do amazing. Owe you an answer, though, for who was the victor in this challenge. I think maybe afterwards you all as a collective sample the different cakes and sort of survivor style have a cookie jar that you put your votes into.
Are they still able to sample my cake? It's kind of everywhere.
I'm sure there's some remains left.
Yeah,
okay.
Awesome.
There's some left.
All right.
Well, I think there's like still some on the tray. It's fine.
All right.
But everybody samples it. I'm just gonna roll a dice. I think gonna be evens.
Ooh.
You know,
a D4, one for each of us.
Mm. If it's even, I only have a D6 on me though.
Okay.
Well, and I think it's
fine.
It's
only
Andrew
and Wesley are still in the running.
Yeah, either Rose or Doris.
Yeah.
Okay. I think they're the ones who are the leaderboard. Let's find out. We're gonna be evens Rose, odds Doris.
Okay.
That is a 3 on the dice.
Ooh,
Doris
nice.
Carlton takes the
upset.
Crown.
I upset the baking master.
Wow. I think Rose.
Rose is in shock, much like Wesley is.
No, she's not. No, Rose is. She's not a. I don't think she's a self-important kind of person. But I just think she's a bit surprised because she's used to doing very, very well done cakes, and she has won awards in the past for them. But hearing that Doris has beaten her, she approaches her after the announcement and says, "Well, it seems that the act of learning is never truly complete, no matter your age." And she nods to you and holds out her hand and says, "Congratulations, dear."
And Doris will reach out and just shake your hand, and she just says, "Thank you. I appreciate it. If it makes you feel any better, I voted for yours. But I guess maybe the personal touch of mine just was that little extra bit."
She turns to look at the rather sad remnants of her cake on the tray, and she says, "Well, I hate to see a culinary masterpiece gone to such waste, but it served a purpose.
It was put to good use.
Higher.
Yes."
And then she'll bring the remnants of the cake over and be like, "Anyone care for a crumb?"
Yeah, Sheriff
Dalrymple.
Oh, you know
Sheriff Dalrymple.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Sheriff Dalrymple's in a chair at this point. He can no longer walk.
Even stand up.
And he just beckons with a finger and just says, "Bring it to me."
He's in like a sugar coma. Yeah. Oh boy. I do have a question, by the way. Do I get any kind of winnings for this?
Oh, you get the winning of. I think you ask Keith that, and he's like neck deep. He's like been talking with. They have like FBI people here now to deal with this like global cult that's been uncovered, and he's like digging through financial records for the show. And he looks at you. His face is like totally crestfallen, and he just pulls out a sheet of stickers from the book, and he peels one off, and he puts a little gold star on your shoulder and says, "Bragging rights, like, I guess."
Wow.
Okay. Fair enough.
Okay.
Fair enough.
And everybody marked a crown of the queen in order to raise our rank earlier.
Yes.
So I want everyone to take a look. Well, I say the crown of the queen. You marked a crown. You can either choose to mark one of your crowns of the queen and then narrate a short scene, or you may choose to mark your first crown of the void. And if you do that, then you can narrate really any sort of cozy vignette, but be sure to incorporate what the shadow in the garden requires. So think about which one you'd like to mark.
Oh, that last one. A scene in the present day showing how you satisfy your physical desires.
That's right.
With cake.
And we'll, you can really put this in time. It could be any time after the events of this. So it could be, you know,
okay,
5 minutes. It could be the next day. It could be a week from then. You know, it's up to you.
I know what I'm going to do for mine.
Yeah.
Oh, I think I'm going to, I know the one I'm going to do too, because it lets me show a part of my cozy place I didn't have the chance to show. So
I see all of our boxes marked. Because the great thing about these is, since they're independent little scenes, you know, in post you can always reorder them if like a particular one strikes your fancy or something like that.
I just saw that three of us picked the same one.
Yeah. In which case, let's do Jane last, since you did a different one. Yeah. And then let's just do Rose, Gladys, Doris for a scene in the present day showing a private side of you very few get to see. Starting with Rose.
All right. Well, perhaps a week, 2 weeks or so later, after everything has calmed down, you see the camera comes back into her kitchen, which has changed somewhat in the intervening time, because she has taken every single cookbook that she had purchased with the written by Miss Jane Leaf and expunged it from her life and her kitchen. It is all gone. Not all, but every cookbook by her, because she can only imagine that all the proceeds from these sales would have gone to support some evil worldwide cult, and she doesn't want to associate with such things. And she is baking as per usual, but I think as a sort of a coping mechanism for everything that has just happened, she, and this is the other side of that, the vignette is that, she doesn't necessarily broadcast this fact, but, anyone passing by her house would hear music cranked up rather loudly, and the music she is hearing is that she's put on, she would never tell anyone that she's a fan, but, she has actually,
gangster rap.
She is actually blasting a playlist of the best of Queen, in her house.
She's ashamed to listen to Queen?
Which, not exactly ashamed, she just
as a Brit?
She just hasn't, she just hasn't, let this be known to her crew yet, and she's not ashamed of, but all it said was rarely get to see, and that's true. She doesn't, it's not like she brings the Queen playlist to the book club
bring
or anything.
Bring a classic rock playlist.
And especially in dealing with her great pain at having been betrayed by one of her chief heroes. The song per se is, can anybody find me somebody to love? And she,
somebody to love.
Yeah.
And we the camera like pulls out of the window as we hear that emotional sting. Let's get Gladys next.
Okay, so Gladys is sitting in her chair knitting, because it didn't really come up, but knitting is her cozy activity of choice, and her style is all of the cardigans, and I imagine in every scene we see Gladys, her sweater just changes to a different hand-knitted sweater for no apparent reason. Like, she has just constantly had a different sweater on in every single scene. But she's sitting in her chair knitting, and I think the camera kind of, like, goes back behind her to where you see, like, a hidden bookshelf has like swung open to reveal this place where she stores not just one but multiple stolen artifacts.
Whoa.
Oh my. I love that.
Doris Carlton, what's yours?
All right, All right, so Doris, I'm also showing a side of me that people don't always get to see. I think my favorite, so when we created our cozy places at the beginning, we all like made details about each other's. One that I was really excited about, I will now be revealing. So Doris, I think it's the same day. It's literally the day of the show and the reveal and everything that happened with that. And she just comes home at the end of the day. She drives up in her black Mustang that she did her custom paint job on. And she parks in the garage, pulls her easel with her kind of her sea painting out of it, and walks inside, places that somewhere to be hung later. And she decides to kind of let some steam loose. You know, she's still kind of energetic after everything that happened. It was exciting and stuff. So she decides that she's just going to do some more painting. It's a kind of painting that people probably wouldn't peg her for. She walks into a special room in her house that she's converted over to the art of mini painting, specifically Warhammer 40K, because her son or one of her grandchildren got really into it, and she was a painter, and it was like a thing that they just got her into, and she is all for it. I'm going to say she is so into it, she even has a 3D printer that she can use to make her own nice. Custom minis.
Nice.
And she goes on and designs one somehow related to this whole thing. Like maybe she like has like a cake like that she like puts into her little STL file to like
she's got
have.
Like a little goblin.
It's like a mimic
cake.
Yeah. But a cake. So it has like eyes and teeth and a tongue coming out of it, but
it's a mimic cake.
I
think there's a cake mimic. I think there's also she makes a series of figurines of people in those wooden masks.
Yeah, yes. Definitely. Yeah. So okay. she starts like designing some of those, and then she goes about her day kind of finishing off just painting some minis.
I love that.
She probably doesn't get to the painting today if she's doing STL files at the end of the day like this, but that's what she's basically doing.
I'm sure she's got a wonderful pile of shame she can dip into.
Okay. Yeah.
And finally, we have Jane Fletcher, a flashback of your fondest memory of your late partner.
I think Jane takes her cake home, like what's left of her little devil food cake. And I think she kind of sets it on the counter as she gets home. And just for a moment, you can almost hear like this kind of old timey like music from like the 50s. And you can see her kind of putting her head back, kind of moving her head back and forth as if she can hear this music that nobody can actually, that isn't actually playing. And I think we see her like have this memory of dancing in the kitchen with her husband, Franklin, as they're just a tiny little kitchen in some little apartment somewhere, and they have made a little devil food cake, and they are like dancing while they're like putting the icing on the cake.
I love that.
That's cute. I like that. Yeah.
And Brindlewood Bay is always framed kind of as a TV show, so I think as that scene finishes up, the outro credits music starts playing, the screen fades to black, and the credits roll. And so ends another episode of Brindlewood Bay.
Yeah!
Awesome!
That was so fun!
Got it!
Oh, yeah. I love how that turned out. I really wasn't sure how it was going to end with all the guessing, but it turned out really well.
Yeah.
But we will come back and we will do a debrief of this to kind of just talk about the system and talk about like what we enjoyed about it and about the game itself. But we will do that eventually. But for now, we will say goodbye and thank you to David.
Shalom.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was awesome.
So fun.
No, that was a blast.
Auf Wiedersehen. Goodbye.
It's been
yes. It's
been ages since I've run this particular mystery, so it was fun to dust it off and get some baking on again.
Yeah,
it was super fun. And we will talk about it more in 2 weeks when we do our debrief episode. But for now, goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye, guys.